Who is your daddy?
I am your father.
You fathers will understand.
My father taught me many things.
I got an idea. How about you all sit there quietly while I make dad noises?
Welcome to episode 10. We've hit double digits. My name is Tim Nestor, and this is Derek Teague. Derek, are you excited that we're at episode 10?
I'm actually shocked because I was planning on firing you at like episode 5.
Sure. Yeah, so, I remember the threat was very clear. Yeah.
So it's been, I have to say, I'm quite disappointed that I'm still doing this with you. I have other people that I was considering. But.
Surprised and disappointed. Yeah, that's not the answer I expected, but at least you're honest. That's good.
Yeah. Woohoo! Episode 10.
Episode 10. I'm really excited, at least, even if Derek's not, to have been a part of this for 10 episodes so far. So thank you guys for supporting and for listening. And for those of you who have joined the new Facebook group there, thanks for jumping in, joining the conversation. And just as a quick reminder, actually, this isn't a reminder. This is a recap. The tournament has happened and somebody won. We don't know who won yet. It's going to happen this Saturday. Actually, you know what we should do? I think I'll probably record a little extra something and announce the winner for the show, and I'll include it in there. So,
yeah, we can do
that. Right now, we don't know who won, but congratulations to whoever you are. You did a great job. And as promised, here's the interruption to share with you the winners of our Rocket League tournament that we did. It was our first ever Fathers of the Grind Rocket League tournament, and Derek and I somehow, I'm not sure how, we came out as the winners in this tournament. So the grand prize of $20 of PlayStation Store cash went back to us. So hooray for us, we get to keep our money. In second place was Moose Cluel and Manuel Sandoval, and I fully expected to lose to them, but it was nice to pull out the win. Also participating were Philippe and Super Falcon, Jesse White and his son Noah. We also had William Powell and Daniel Fritas. We also had Zan and Gunblade. We had Jose and Daniel was on that team as well. And then we had, the last team was John Martin and Nick Cowan. So thank you guys all for participating. There are many others who tried to get in there and couldn't quite make it for one reason or another. But thank you all for participating. It was a lot of fun. And we apologize for winning by so much. And now back to our regularly scheduled program. But it's stuff like that. It's Rocket League tournaments. I know that our community as well in the Platinum Achievements did a Street Fighter V tournament. That's really cool. And just the interactions that we have, the conversations about new movie trailers that come out or big game announcements or whatever it is that happens. It's in big life changes, even new job or big relationship situation. It's nice to have a group of people that share the same hobby, but also you kind of have that community that's built. Even though we're all in different walks of life. So thank you guys for being a part of that. Feel free to join the group if you haven't yet. Again, it's Fathers of the Grind. It's the Facebook group there in the Facebook search. You'll be able to find it. Or you can send us an email, fathersofthegrind@gmail.com. So Derek, what I want to do real quick as our way to highlight some of our community members is to have us try to pronounce some of our harder to pronounce names in our group that I highlighted. So we're gonna take a stab. I'll go first, and then you'll try, and then you'll go first, and I'll try. We'll alternate who tries first to pronounce some of these names. So if your name is mentioned, that means that we've always read your name, and in our minds we had a version of how to say it, and we're going to take a stab at it and embarrass ourselves.
We're going to get yelled at. And let me just say before we start this, I have a cold, so you're probably going to hear some coughing. I apologize for that. I'll try to mute it as best I can, or hopefully get some of it edited out, but you'll hear me coughing.
Yeah, no worries. I had like 2 or 3 weeks in a row where I was dealing with that, so no big deal. All right, so I'm going to take a stab at this first name. This is a member of our group that I've talked to quite a few times about a number of different things. Works at a radio station over in Europe, and his name is Jürgen van Boeningen.
I think that's going to be pretty close.
That's how
I would have said. I would have said Jürgen van Boeningen.
Buningen, yeah. I was gonna say Bunningen, but that sounds super American, so I went Buningen. I feel like that's the way you say it. Buningen. So Jürgen, let me know how we did. All right, you take a stab at number two there, Derek.
Okay. I know the first name's Sasan, or I'm gonna assume it's Sasan. The last name, Baba, 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 honey. This is really hard with a sore
butchered
throat.
It. I'm going to go with my super American version. I'm going to say, Sass and Behani. That's my attempt. Is that good? Did I get it?
I think you nailed it.
I think it's Sassin, yeah. All right, so here's the next one. It's Mustafa Zaid.
Yeah, that one's an easier one.
A little easier, I think. Yeah, okay. All right, go ahead.
I think this next one's pretty easy. Gaston Cena.
Oh, see, I would have said Gaston because of Beauty and the Beast back in the day.
Remember Gaston? It might be. Yeah, it might be Gaston.
Gaston, and then I'm not sure if there's... Is it Senya or Senna?
I'm going to go with Senya.
Okay, all right. See, we're so American, so uncultured.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. All right, why don't you take a stab at the next one?
Mustafa Yasar Ragawa.
That's good.
It's terrible.
Let me try. Mustafa Yasar Ragab.
Ragab.
Yeah.
Ragab.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, my turn. Okay, here we go. We just chatted with this guy about our Rocket League tournament. He's going to be participating here.
Yeah, he insulted me multiple times.
All right, well then, he deserves to have his name butchered by uncultured Americans. Here we go. Zan Hisam.
Yeah, I think that's what I would go with. Yeah.
Zan Hisam. Okay, all right. Go ahead, your turn.
All right, next, Shaman Muir.
I was going to go with... Shaman Muir. Yeah, Muir. Okay. Yeah. That's kind of what I would say, yeah. So sorry for those of you who we butchered your names. If we got it right, awesome. And if not, then feel free to let us know about it. I'm sure you will. The last one is kind of an interesting one because in my head, there's a certain way I've always pronounced his last name, but I thought I'd list this one just because I think it's kind of funny. Maybe you already know how to pronounce his name. Go ahead and take a stab at this one.
All right, he's Canadian, And I don't like him.
I know,
but
it's very clear.
I'm going to try to say his name. Uh-huh. Michael Harubi. Harubi.
So I wonder if his name is last name is just pronounced Ruby.
It probably is.
In my head, it's always Hruby, like a really hard
H. That's how I say it,
right before it. Michael Hruby.
In between, like, all my cuss words and swearing towards him.
Yeah.
I always pronounce it.
Yeah, it's like you're trying to clear your throat right before you say Ruby. Like, don't forget the Hruby. You know what I mean? Like, you're trying to clear it out as you're saying it.
All right, so I hope, first of all, we didn't offend any of you guys, but I thought it was fun to take a stab. We'll tag all of them and let them know that.
That's right.
The first 5 minutes was us butchering their name on the show.
Well, for anyone who listened to our earlier episodes, you know that we kind of broke down Derek's last name too. Everything from Tigwe to Tagui, and so yeah, you're not alone. And I'm sure that many of you, having friends from the States, you have heard your names completely butchered before. So hopefully, this wasn't a unique experience for you.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, let's talk about what we're playing a little bit there, Derek. Why don't you go first? Tell us what you're playing currently, and then what's up next after you finish whatever you're playing currently.
This should be pretty quick, because I'm pretty much playing the same stuff. Obviously, I'm still playing Rocket League, but my main game I've been focusing still on is Fallout 4. I'm probably more than halfway through the main quest. I've been doing some side stuff as well.
Are you in the settlement stuff that I keep hearing about?
No. I ignore that type of stuff.
Okay.
Only the stuff that's required, and then I like going from location to location, just basically eliminating all enemies. I enjoy that because I'm in love with the combat, so that's the best part about Fallout. The story is pretty good. It's interesting enough that I want to know how it concludes, even though it was technically spoiled for me. I still kind of want to see how it plays out.
That's good to hear, because I've had it spoiled for me too, very, very early on, right as the game was, I think, freshly released. I heard right away.
I don't know if I shared this on the podcast, but I was playing a match of Rocket League with these two jerks, and every time they would have like a moment to type something in. They obviously had this typed in so they could just do like almost like a copy and paste type thing. But they were spoiling Fallout 4, the new Star Wars movie, everything. Now, luckily, I had already seen the Star Wars movie, so I wasn't upset about that. But Fallout 4...
Yeah, I remember that fad.
I had not finished, so I was a little teed off by that because it's just kind of annoying.
Yeah.
I don't... And anybody gets to know me... I really don't care about spoilers. Like, I don't make a big deal about it. Like, if somebody tells me the first 5 minutes of a video game, I'm not like, stop! You know, I don't do that. But if you come out and blurt out the ending, it gets
a little
annoying.
Or a major twist to reveal,
Yeah, like, I was at church last night, and I'm sitting there with my pastor and this other woman, and they just start talking The Walking Dead. And I'm like, oh, spoilers! Like, they just start spoiling stuff.
They just lead off with a major character death.
Yeah, that's how he always is, though. I'm throwing my pastor on the bus.
He doesn't even say what show it is. He just says the character's name and death.
He just starts going into stuff, and he starts spoiling it. And I'm like, oh. And I said it nicely. I was like, yeah, I'm just in season 5.
You know who else does that, who I'm actually a really big fan of, is Jared Petty over at IGN. I love when he's on shows. I like the way his voice sounds. He's very intelligent, has ridiculous knowledge about really tons of stuff, literature, movies, but also especially gaming. And he will drop the biggest spoilers in trying to let us know something unique or special about a game. He'll drop the biggest spoilers. I don't know if you've heard that before, but whether it's on GameScoop or Beyond or any of the other shows that he's been on, he will drop some major spoilers. And even his other co-hosts are like, dude, you've got to stop spoiling every game you talk about.
But, yeah, because he like knows everything about every single game.
So and he's written guides for just about every game in existence. Yeah, but,
that's how he got in the industry.
Yeah, he's
great.
So yeah,
Fallout 4 is the main one. I'm also playing The Division.
Right.
I haven't played a lot because I'm trying not to play a lot. I'm trying to wait for my brother. So as soon as he logs into his PS4 and has time to play, I'm going to team up with him. And then as far as my next step, what I would like to play next after I complete Fallout 4, I'd like to get into Twilight Princess, the high def that we talked about last week. I played a few hours this past week, enjoyed it so far, but I haven't really gotten anywhere.
Are you noticing a big difference from what you remember that game being back in the day?
Yeah, I mean, I remember like major stuff, like, you know, spoiler, you become a wolf. And stuff like that, but I don't remember like anything about it.
Yeah,
I remember some of the you know, some of the dungeons that I'm gonna hit in the future, but I haven't actually hit them yet. I remember like certain parts that I got stuck on, so I'm waiting to run into those again.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I haven't gotten far. I'm only a few hours in.
Well, yeah, I mean, just a few hours, you're probably still herding goats or whatever. Like, that opening does take too long, but okay.
No, I don't remember where I left off. I'm a little past that, though.
Okay, cool. All right, well, I am almost finished with Far Cry Primal. I've done everything in that game, basically, you can do except for the final mission. I am down to the final... I don't want to give it 2 inches. That's basically a final boss fight that I have yet to do. Once I complete that, I'll actually get the plat for that game because I've done all the other trophies. So it's pretty exciting. I'm not a big trophy hunter, but for this game, for some reason, the trophies, I looked through the list, they were all kind of fun to get, and they all most of them naturally happen throughout play anyway. So yeah, really enjoy that game quite a bit. About 30 hours or so of total play time on that. So it's pretty meaty, but not overwhelming compared to other games like Witcher 3. I recommend it. It's just a lot of fun. It's a solid, one of those games that's a solid 8 from most outlets, and I would kind of agree with that score because it's not a perfect game, but man, is it a lot of fun. So, for those of you who have a chance to try it out, even just rent it if you have to, it's really, really fun. Love that game.
Yeah, I'll definitely hit that one. I know I said I was going to play Twilight Princess next, but I think, because I like to play a couple games at the same time, I'll probably try to start Fallout as well.
Okay. Yeah, the thing with Far Cry Primal is that, I mean, it's not
Fallout
for
Far Cry.
That's all right. The thing with Far Cry is that it's not going to be for everyone because there's no guns, you know, there's no modern setting, and that messes with some people. They don't want just bow and arrow or spears, but you'd be surprised at how good a lot of the weapons feel. The melee combat isn't the best, especially with clubs, with the way they swing, but the spear is really cool. And the bow and arrow, of course, is awesome. And the upgrades you get are great. They fill in the blanks with a lot of modern type weapons. Like, you get different types of quote-unquote grenades and throwing shards, which are like daggers or poison darts. They give you a lot of stuff that kind of fills in those gaps of what you think you're missing with guns. But that being said, it still does heavily rely on using stealth, using your tamed beasts to finish stuff. So really good. Not going to be for everybody, but really, really good. And a beautiful game. Absolutely beautiful game.
Yeah, I thought it was good looking.
Up next for me is going to be The Division. I'm very excited about that. I've heard a lot of hype about it, and I think I think I've got the appropriate expectations for it, knowing that it's a, you know, it's an online game, and there's certain expectations that come with that style of game, whether, you know, the Destiny style of game. But I've read enough about it, heard enough from you and from others that I feel like I've got the right expectations going in. So I'm very excited to jump into The Division probably this weekend. At the same time, I'll be jumping into Hitman, which comes out tomorrow, comes out on Friday. So by the time you hear this, I will have already jumped in a little bit. It's getting decent reviews for this first intro pack, this opening chapter of Paris. Apparently, there's a lot of different ways you can approach the mission. You can kind of try it from a bunch of different avenues. And then, of course, there's other game modes even within the intro pack that you can try. And the review that I read a few reviews, but the one I read recently from IGN basically says it takes some of the best things from Blood Money and from Absolution and mixes them together. And so that to me was all I needed to hear, because I love Blood Money and I really enjoyed Absolution. So I'm looking forward to it. The beta was kind of fun. I only played it for a little bit. So, but I'm a huge fan of this series. I played all the games, liked all of them quite a bit. So yeah, Hitman's coming up.
I saw, I watched the IGN video review. And it definitely looked... First of all, I've heard this game's, like, really ugly, but I...
Yeah, I heard that too.
And I'm watching the video, which anytime you watch through YouTube, you don't actually get what it really looks like. And
yeah, Far Cry Primal is a good example.
Yeah,
of that,
I was expecting, like, a really ugly Hitman game. I thought it looked decent. I mean, it looked like some of the movements were, like, you know, last gen. You know, even in the IGN review, they pointed out like a scene where it looks really beautiful, and then something happens, like something's falling, like it looks like part of a building's like crashing in or something, and everything looked and moved really weird. I saw that, but overall the game actually looked pretty pretty nice, and it looked kind of interesting. I think I'll give it a shot. I don't know where I'm gonna fit it in with all my other games, but I think it's one of those where I'll like turn it on, try it, and if I suck at it, I'll just turn it off and maybe never come back to it.
The good news is
pretty good, I'll keep playing.
It's pretty affordable barrier for entry. I mean, it's $15. You get the intro pack, you get that first mission, you can give it a try. So if you're curious about it, I mean, I'm not saying $15 is nothing. I mean, most of us, you know, money's a big deal. You don't want to just throw money away. But if you like the Hitman series and you want to try this one out, you're not dropping $60. And then if you're disappointed, you're mad that you bought that game. It's $15. And it's the one mission, and it introduces you to what the rest of the game might be like. And if you like it, great. Buy the other ones as they come out. If you don't, move on and just ignore the rest of the release.
So it's just one mission for $15?
I believe so. I believe it's one large area.
Yeah, it's big area.
I think there's one main mission, but I also think there's other modes. Like, for example, there might be different people to take out in different modes, and there are different locations and different methods of taking them out. I don't know enough about it. I kind of don't want to know too much about it. I don't know enough about it to really break down for you how many ways are to approach it. But I do know that whoever reviewed it said there's plenty there. You know, you get bang for your buck for the $15.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
Yeah, not bad. All right, let's talk about, speaking of games, and how good games are, and, you know, game scores, things like that. I want to read off really quickly what Metacritic considered to be the best games in February for each platform. So what they do is the first week of each month, they look back at the previous month, and they issue kind of a report, their Metacritic report. And what's interesting is that it's not always 100% accurate. So if you click on this article on Metacritic and look through their Best of February 2016, their list of PS4, Xbox One, PC, and so on games for being best games, and they're not totally accurate because there are some games that aren't included. And maybe there's some kind of algorithm or system they have set up where if it's included on one list, exclude it from the other, or if it's a re-release, don't include it. I'm not sure, but I went ahead and dug a little deeper on Metacritic and just pulled out the top 5 rated games for each platform for the month of February. And I want to do this for two reasons. Number one, we talk plenty about game ratings and how they do affect whether or not we purchase in a lot of cases. But also, some of you out there are wondering, you know, how good is this game? Should I get it? I've been on the fence about this one. Or maybe there's a game that you haven't heard of and hearing its title now will make you want to go check it out. So here we go. Here's the list. I'm going to give Derek a second to get his voice back, and I'll just read off the list here. Derek, if you do have a thought, though, by the way, or a question, or, you know, want to share something, feel free to interject here. But here's the PS4 games. According to Metacritic, the best games of February. Number one was Crypt of the Necrodancer at an 86 average. I believe that's a re-release from a PC game. Same thing with Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time with 85, which I believe was on PC and Xbox One before. The first brand new game that wasn't on any other platform before was Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2. That came in with an 83 average on the PS4. Naruto, I'm going to butcher this, Naruto Shippuden Ultimate Ninja Storm 4.
No, I think you nailed it.
81 average. And then Dying Light, the following DLC, came out with an 80 average. So all 80 and above, top five for the PS4. Great month for that system. Of course, that's not all the games. It's just the top five, according to Metacritic. Xbox One, this list is not that much different, but things are in a little bit different order. Number one is Rocket League at 87. That released in February. And if you guys have not played it, haven't tried it, grab it on one of the systems, Xbox One or PS4. Absolute blast to play. Dying Light the following came in at 86 on the Xbox One. We've talked about the reasoning behind different scores already, so we don't have to cover that. Naruto Shippuden Ultimate Ninja Storm 4 was at 84. Layers of Fear was also an 84. And Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2 came in at 81 for the Xbox One. So another good month for that system as well. Nice wide variety of games there.
Let me interject real quick, because I don't think we have a section where we're going to talk about this, but this literally was just announced, like, right now.
What's that?
Or at least it was shared with me. Mm-hmm. But Rocket League is adding a basketball mode.
What?
Yeah, you heard me right. That sounds amazing. Basketball mode next.
Okay, so is it what I... Do you have a picture of it or something? Is it what I imagine, where there's going to be a hoop up high where you got to score it in from the top?
Well, okay, so it's kind of like, you know, soccer and hockey. The basketball court is, you know, kind of square with roundish corners.
Okay.
And then where the goal is, there's a basketball hoop there that is obviously wider, and it's lower to the ground. There is a net, but it's not real high up from what I can see on the picture.
Okay. All right.
But the picture is showing, like, a guy or a car floating in the air shooting the ball in, so I haven't seen any gameplay. I'm really interested in that. But since we were talking about Rocket League with it being an 87, they just announced new game mode.
That's very cool. Yep, didn't know about that. Yeah, so between the regular indoor soccer style gameplay and then the hockey version they put out this past winter, which was a nice variation, and then
Like the hockey. My only issue with it was I didn't like how most of the goals were just you sliding the puck around the outside.
Yeah, there was a weird magnetism to the puck once it got in front of the goal. Yeah, I didn't like that either. But it was still a very fun version, you know, kind of a variation on an already very fun game. And then now, yeah, basketball. That's really cool. Very cool. I like the way they're experimenting with that game.
Exactly. Even if it fails, let's say basketball completely stinks, the fact that they're doing it just opens the doors to, I'm sure they'll have at some point, like a golf mode where you have to hit the golf ball into a hole, you know, that could be like a little side mode, and then there's probably going to be figure out something for football.
Or maybe even like a volleyball type mode. You can't let it hit the ground too many times or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the PC games. Now, of course, I'm not a PC gamer. You do have a gaming PC, but I don't know if any of these are games that you are interested in, but one of them might catch your attention if you haven't read about it yet. Number one is XCOM 2 at an 88 average. Just a great score, and I am excited for when that eventually, because I know it will, comes to consoles or Vita or something. It's got to come to consoles at some point.
I'll get it on PC eventually. It'll be one that even though I could have gotten it for like $35 on day one, because of all the games I'm playing, I'll buy it when it's like $10, $15.
I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of the summer, maybe by the fall, you get a price like that for that.
Yeah.
Stardew Valley, I've heard some talk about that. It's an 87 average. A lot of people liking that game. I can't really speak to it because I don't know much about it, but people are talking about it. I think it's something involving a farm and crops and animals. I don't know exactly what it is.
Oh, sounds like definitely the type of game.
Riveting. All right. Dying Light, the following enhanced edition on the PC, got an 87. And here's one that's interesting, that IGN called this next one of the best action RPGs in years. And it's called Grim Dawn. It came out at 85. And it got great reviews across the board. I just took the IGN quote from their review. But have you heard much about this game? It kind of has a Diablo 3 look to it. Do you know much about Grim Dawn? And if not, you should check it out.
I don't. but I'm not also really a big Diablo fan.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, neither am I. I like the Diablo games, but they're not my favorite style. Yeah. But anyway, for those of you who do like those action RPG styles, that kind of it looks kind of isometric view, but it got great reviews. It's called Grim Dawn. Go check that one out. And then lastly, Devil Daggers. It's only a few bucks. I don't think it's too expensive. Very challenging, but very creative. So some cool stuff there. All right, that's the PC games. Now let's go. This next list is a long one. So
yeah,
take a big breath. This is gonna be a tough one. The best Wii U game from February. Nope, there's nothing. There's no list there. Never mind.
Oh, I thought that three dots.
The three, yeah. That's because I couldn't list them all. There's too many. No releases to speak of for the Wii U in February. All right, moving on to the 3DS. Fire Emblem Fates averages right around 87 to 88, and I think Revelations is going to be coming in at a little higher than that, but that releases this month.
Yes.
Mega Man Legacy Collection comes in at a 79. Did you ever play the Mega Man games, or is that another franchise that wasn't really your thing?
That's another one you probably don't want my opinion on.
Well, I mean, it's a platforming shooter. At this point, I kind of have an idea of your taste, but I do like the Mega Man games. The first one I played was Mega Man X on the Super Nintendo. That was my introduction to the series. I had kind of skipped the series before that. Then I ended up going back and playing a bunch on the Game Boy and a few on the NES via Virtual Console and emulators. I like them a lot. They're not my favorite. I think they get a little bit too much credit for being amazing platforming shooting games, but they are fun. They are very cool.
I don't know if it was just when I was younger. I wanted to start to say this, and then I started thinking about it. I'm like, a lot of people that love these 2D platformers or, you know, Metroidvania type games, they played them when they were younger too. I played all those types of games. Like, I loved Contra, and I used to play the 2D beat 'em ups and all that stuff, and now, if somebody shows me those games, I'm like, no, I have no interest at all.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I mean, they're not for everybody still. I mean, some people like the nostalgia, number one. Others still just enjoy that very raw, basic gameplay mechanic of going back and forth and fighting like that. So, yeah, that's all right. Different strokes, man. No big deal. But I do like the Mega Man games, and that collection's getting pretty decent scores. And then Project X Zone 2 is averaging a 74. So the 3DS had a pretty decent...
surprised by that, because every review I've seen for that game has been low. I think I even checked GameSpots today and they gave it a 5 out of 10.
Oh, okay. Well, enough outlets liked it that it's averaging a 74, so pretty decent.
Yeah.
Actually, no, that's good. I would say that's pretty good, actually. That's not just decent, that's good. All right, the PS Vita only saw one release worth mentioning this past month, and that was the port of Hitman Go, the definitive edition, coming in at 76, and I do have that and haven't even played it yet, so I got to get on that. But Hitman Go, a lot of people like that game.
It's a fun, like, you know, almost like puzzle game that you can just get lost in.
That's what I've heard. I've heard it's a fun platinum too. I've heard multiple people say it's a fun platinum. That doesn't always mean that I'll think it's fun, but I've heard that said many times. It's a fun platinum. So
I think it's a fun platinum because it's one of those that you can go and watch a walkthrough and it's really easy to follow.
Okay, gotcha.
Because I seriously doubt, and I'm not saying all people that did it, obviously somebody had to do it before they put it up on YouTube or something, but I know, like, Greg Miller already got the platinum, but I know he didn't do it on his own. Like, he went and watched walkthroughs because you have to do it in certain amount of turns, and there's certain objectives, like you can't kill anybody or anything like that.
Gotcha.
That makes it even more difficult. So gotcha. I think it's one of those that would be difficult if you're not going on YouTube.
I have no shame using guides or help or searching forums to get help with trophies. If for some reason I decide I really want to knock out some trophies, I have no problem doing that. But some people are more purist than that. They say, hey, if you're going to earn it, you got to earn it, but whatever. Look up a guide if you want to, people. It doesn't matter.
No.
All right, mobile games last month. I'm not a big mobile gamer, but there are some good ones that came out. There was Love You to Bits, came in at 88. Final Fantasy IX came in at 88 average, and that's too low. That game is amazing.
I'm waiting for it to come on PC. As soon as it comes on PC, I'm buying it right away. Oh,
so good. Underscore Prism, never heard of it, but it's an 85 average. All Is Lost is 83, and then Adventures of Mana at an 82, which kind of, I'm not even sure if that's part of the Secret of Mana or Legend of Mana series. I imagine it is, but
all those RPGs have Mana in there.
There you go. All right, so some decent mobile games, too, if you're a mobile gamer, have at it. All right, so there you go. There's your February games. And, yeah, and actually, I'm curious to hear from you guys. We'll probably put a post, I guess, up in the group. What was your favorite game from February? And I think for me, just because I'm basically almost finished with it and it occupied most of my time, so far, right now, I got to say Far Cry Primal is my favorite, my personal favorite game that I've played from February that released that month, that I've played. I haven't played all of them. But as much as I love me some Fire Emblem, I'm still at right in that 13, 14, chapter 13 or 14 phase of Conquest. I have not gotten as far in that game because Primal's taken up all my attention. So yeah, that's my favorite one from February. All right. Let's talk about some news, my friend.
Headlines.
There are some headlines, some big ones too, and some of them are a little bit sad, or at least worth getting your thoughts on.
So you want to talk about like the political debates? Is that what we're?
I do. Yes, please. Let's talk about Bernie and Trump and Clinton, and let's do that. I can't wait.
Let's break it down for the people.
For the people. That's right. Let's talk about Fable Legends. Fable Legends was going to be a free-to-play online multiplayer take on that franchise, a franchise that I've enjoyed several of those games. And this version of the game, Fable Legends, did not interest me whatsoever. I watched a lot of video on it. I read a lot of reviews on, or I guess previews on it. It was not something I was interested in, but in the back of my mind, I was just thinking, yeah, when they make the next mainline Fable, I'll get back in. I thought the same thing with Fable Journey, and that didn't do it for me either, that connect-centric first-person thing they did. And then news comes out this week that Fable Legends has been canceled. And not only that, it's looking like Lionhead Studios is going to be closing. Now, I imagine you read about this. What was your first thought when you saw Fable Legends is canceled and Lionhead is likely to be shut down?
All right, so I do want to talk about this. And again, apologize for my cool throat.
Don't worry about it.
You know, I downloaded the Fable Legends beta or whatever it is. And I played probably about 15, 20 minutes, and I gotta say, the game's absolutely gorgeous.
Really?
And it plays really well, because you kind of start off where you're just walking from, like, you're walking on this path in this beautiful area, and you're killing enemies, and it almost plays like you're playing a Fable RPG. I hadn't gotten to the point where I was in, like, a MOBA or anything like that, or multiplayer yet. So when I had played that, and again, I didn't get far, I just played for a little bit, because we've talked about this. I don't like playing betas and demos long. I like to get a feel for it to go, is this something when this actually releases that I'm going to play, or no? When I walked away from that one, it was a game I was going to download and play. I mean, it was free to play.
Right.
So I didn't foresee, me playing it a lot, but I did foresee me playing it.
Okay.
Like, it was good enough to get me to go, yeah, I would support it as a big Fable fan.
Sure.
So when I saw it was canceled, I won't say bummed, because I'm kind of like you. I was like, all right, Fable Legends, where's Fable 4? Or yeah. Fable, a different name, but
yeah,
actually
call it whatever
RPG.
You want. Just, yeah, bring
yeah.
it back.
and so I wasn't a huge fan of what they were doing with Legends. So when I heard it was canceled, I was like, that's fine. And then the next thing, or next part of the article was like, oh, Lionhead Studios is shutting down. And I'm like, okay, so my first thought was, okay, well, Microsoft will just move Fable to something else.
Yeah, yep.
And then I started thinking, I'm like, well, okay, but Lionhead, you know, Fable is a unique game. Yes, it's an action RPG, but it's got a lot of British humor.
It does.
You can't just pass that off to like another group of developers.
Yeah,
and
it's got to be the right people. I agree.
Yeah, it would have to be. You would have to get some of the people from Lionhead and have maybe another crew that you're using that's cheaper. I don't know what Microsoft's thinking, but then I was like, okay, they're closing now. Maybe there isn't another Fable. Maybe Fable Legends was the last straw. And it was like, we're going to try something different because, and this is, I asked this question and nobody answered, and I didn't bother researching it, even though I normally research my stuff. I was like, okay, here's my question. How well did Fable 3 sell? Because every time somebody brings up Fable 3, a lot of people have played it, but everybody's like, usually has a distaste for it. They're like,
yeah.
Eh. It isn't that good. I personally liked it, but out of all the Fable RPGs, it was the worst. By far the worst. Not even close.
You're talking about the first Fable, right?
Well, Fable 3 is the worst out of all the Fables.
Oh, I see. I see, yeah.
Okay. I liked Fable 2 the most, and then I liked the original Fable second most. And those two
Okay,
are...
good. I agree with you. I thought you were talking about the first one for a second for some reason. I'm with you. Two, one, then three. Yeah absolutely
and,
agree.
And
yep.
I guess 2 and 1 would be closer to each other, and 3 would be a huge drop-off. So that's what made me think, well, maybe Fable 3 didn't sell well. And so Microsoft was like, well, let's try something different. And then that failed. Because I don't think they had a lot of interest in the beta. That's why I have a feeling it got canceled. Is they're like, we're not going to make anything off this game even being free. We're not even going to be able to do microtransactions. This game is just going to bomb. So let's just shut it down. Let's shut Lionhead down because they haven't done anything recently. It's made us any money. And to me, with that, that could ultimately mean the end of Fable, which... for me, it is a big deal. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, it's a top five franchise. It's not. But in the Microsoft side of things, it's probably in the top 10 for me of franchises I look forward to for that, from them.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely bummed. It really frustrates me that it didn't work out. Not just for Legends, but just the way Microsoft handled Lionhead Studios and Fable in general.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is hearing about Fable Legends cancellation and the Lionhead Studios closing, or likely closing, it's interesting. It's actually making me want to jump back into Fable 2 again. I've got it sitting up there on my shelf beside Fable 3, and I really loved Fable 2. Like, it was so good, and it had a great sense of humor, dark humor, but it wasn't just like a Monty Python goof fest. You know, it was actually had a serious storyline to it, and it was decent. And I liked it a lot. I liked the choices that you had. You could develop your powers as well as your good versus evil persona, whichever way you wanted to go. I don't know. It was not the best game ever made, and it did not have incredibly deep systems, but it did do a lot of stuff really well. So I loved that series, and it's very sad to hear what's happening. For those of you who aren't familiar, Lionhead was founded, it looks like, 20 years ago. So this is their 20-year anniversary. And they developed other games like Black and White, which was, I think, their first release. And that was in 2001. Yeah, I know. 20-year anniversary. See ya. But then after Black and White, they mainly focused on Fable. And it's just kind of sad to see that happening. I mean, it was set to... the open beta was supposed to launch this spring. And obviously that is not going to be happening. So... anyway, sorry for those of you who are Fable fans, and hopefully at some point Microsoft will make that IP, you know, it'll realize it in some other way. I'd love to see it come back, and who knows, maybe they'll let it rest for a while. Maybe it's going to be 3 or 4 years, and maybe even the next system, who knows. But I'd hate to think that Fable's gone for good, because I do really like it.
I don't think it'll be gone for good. I think, you know, I look at it as like, you know, as a comparison... Crackdown was very, very popular when it released. And then Crackdown 2 came out, and it was a little bit more hyped because a lot of people were, like, surprised by how good Crackdown was. And then Crackdown 2 came out, and it pretty much bombed. It's not a terrible game, but, again, it's another one. It's kind of like Fable 3, where when I went into it, I was like, what is this? This is stupid.
Yeah.
Like, all these changes they made were just dumb.
Yep.
And so I actually didn't play probably more than 30 minutes of Crackdown 2. Anyways, point it being, after Crackdown 2, it was almost looked at as that series was dead, too. And then they've revived it. So Microsoft is... definitely been in the business of bringing stuff back. They brought Killer Instinct back. They've brought Crackdown back. They were working on, what was the one? I think we talked about it a few shows back that we said it wasn't completely
Phantom Dust.
Dead. Yeah, Phantom Dust is being brought back.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, you know, Death Row will come back. I mean, come on. Come on.
If it does, I'm going to have to play it after my embarrassing... horrible attempt at trying to do trivia a couple weeks ago.
I tell you what, man, I hype up a lot of games, but if that game ever comes back, like, just give me a $20 semi remaster. Like, just make it a little bit prettier, but at least give me 60 frames per second. I don't know if I'll buy another game ever again.
That's all you need.
All I need is Rocket League and Death Row.
I believe that as much as I believe that you're not buying a modern military shooter again. So
I'm definitely never going to buy it again, except Titanfall 2.
Except Titanfall 2. Titanfall 2. All right. Let me give you one more, like, I guess you can call it more sad headline, and then we'll move on to, like, happier stuff. So another major headline this past week was that Cameron Harris, a senior editor at Mass Effect developer BioWare, is leaving the studio. And she announced this in a string of tweets. And here's what she said. I've decided to exit the video game industry to return to Seattle for new opportunities there. I will be leaving BioWare in mid-April. I had a great time at BioWare working with many talented, passionate folks, and I'm grateful for everything you taught me over the years. So she started working there in 2012, working on The Old Republic, which is one of the last MMO that I really dug into, and I do like that game a lot. She also worked for Nintendo and Microsoft in the past before that, and BioWare. So here's why this is an interesting story to me and kind of a sad story to me. It's not necessarily because I know much about this senior editor, Cameron Harris. I'm sure she's great at her job, and I'm sure she'll be missed. So I'm not trying to downplay that whatsoever. I'm really not. The bigger thing to me is that this is the third BioWare staffer leaving BioWare in 3 months. So let me just ask you this. Does this sound like, I mean, does this throw up red flags for you as a, see, I like the Mass Effect trilogy in the series. I do like it. It's really good. But you're a much bigger fan, as we've already established, of all things BioWare, and you love Mass Effect. So how does this make you feel hearing these headlines, even if you don't see the direct effects of, oh, that editor was supposed to edit this part of the game? Like, you have no idea. None of us know what it is that she was doing or would be doing if she had stayed, or who's going to have to fill in. We don't know all those behind the scenes details. But how does it make you feel? What's your reaction when you see, wow, another BioWare staff member leaving?
I don't care. I don't. Okay. Okay. I think the reason why, no, it wasn't. It's like me coming back and just like, Tim, that's a dumb question. Yeah. No, it's not a dumb question. I'm saying I don't care because, and I was going to give the answer. I work for a big bank, you know, a big corporation, a big firm, and people they move constantly. And,
yeah.
You know, people, it could be an internal move, external move. People are constantly coming in, leaving, all this. That's what these companies are becoming. It's not. I'm not saying that's not how they were before. I'm sure they were, maybe not to the extent that it is now. Just like if you look at sports, old school sports, a lot of athletes stayed on the same team. If you're good enough, you stayed on the same team for your entire career. Now, it's constant. I'm a Broncos fan, man. I've watched the last few days, basically our entire Super Bowl team jetting, you know, through free agency. And that's kind of what I see a lot of happening with the video game industry. I'm constantly hearing, and we're hearing more of it because we have more media in the gaming industry, but constantly seeing people move from publisher to developer, developer to developer, you know, and constantly just moving because they're getting better offers. I mean, they'll be like, oh, you know, you're working for BioWare. And I'm not saying this happened with this lady. But, oh, you're working for BioWare. You're probably not that happy anymore because you've been there for 4 or 5 years. Everything gets old after a while. We can pay you $20,000 extra year or $30,000 or whatever. Come over here and we'll give you something new and exciting to do. Those people are going to move. And that's what I think we're seeing a lot more. So to answer your question, am I worried about the state of Mass Effect? No.
Yeah, that's exactly what I meant to ask.
So, yeah, okay. I know. But you know me, long answers. You get long answers. But yeah, I'm not worried about the state of Mass Effect, just like I'm not worried about the state of Uncharted 4. You know, there was a lot of questions raised. I'm like,
wow. Yeah, there still are questions. Until that game comes out, then, yeah, there still are questions about that final
product.
Well, yeah,
and with all the delays, and I know a lot of people believed, and I do want to talk about this, so heck yeah, I'm throwing this in here. Because I don't think we really talked about it that much. But with this last delay, them saying it's a manufacturing delay, that's BS. It's not a manufacturing delay. It's Naughty Dog having to come back to Sony and say, look, we took a little bit longer on polishing this game, and we need a couple more weeks. But we can't exactly come out and say, guys, can you give us another 2 weeks? So I think Sony, because this is their baby, mm-hmm. was willing to come up with some BS excuse.
Yeah, that could be true. I mean, who knows? Maybe they experienced some, and you know, in testing, they've got to be in late testing at this point. Yeah. Maybe in testing they came across some bugs, and it sounds a lot better to say manufacturing than it does to say game bugs. You know,
the funny joke that I heard on PS I Love You is when they started talking about it, they're like, maybe that Assassin's Creed picture was like a whole part in the video game.
So that artwork?
So they had to cut out an entire section and rework it because of that one picture.
Yeah, that one guy who used it everywhere in the game.
And they're like going through it.
He's
like,
copying and pasting that image in every setting.
We need 2 weeks to clean this crap out. Oh, no, but I do think that, you know, those games are fine. I trust the systems built around it more than just the individual people working on it. You know, I think we talked about this last week, that AAA titles are seen as bunch of robots coming together to work on a game. Even though we know they're individuals, they all have departments, all sections have certain things they have to work on, and they are almost doing like robot type work, and that's why I don't worry about Mass Effect and Uncharted.
I don't, first, in some areas, like for editor, for this, okay, let's say that the only news that broke was that this senior editor is leaving. Now, if you are an editor or know someone who is, believe me, I've done a lot of editing, both for audio and video, never for games, obviously. I'm not downplaying the importance of it or the challenge of it or how much skill it could take. But it's different than someone who is a writer, who is the creative lead on something. So when we learned that David Gator, for example, the head writer from Dragon Age, is now gone and he's going to be working with Beamdog on the next Baldur's Gate game, that was a pretty big deal for the Dragon Age franchise. And then when we learned that the lead writer for this game, Mass Effect Andromeda, is now leaving BioWare for Bungie, that was a big deal for both series. It was a big deal for Mass Effect because it's like, wow, this is one of your lead writers. He's one of your main creatives in crafting the story and the characters. And now that's big news for Destiny fans as well, because whether it's for expansions or for Destiny 2, you're looking at a much, hopefully, much more skilled hand at getting things pulled together.
Ultimately, again, first of all, Bungie probably approached this person because they were probably
without a doubt. I guarantee you, there was a money in hand.
Exactly, but to your point about, well, how does that affect Mass Effect? I mean, you're talking about a lead writer. More than likely, he left because he was probably getting blocked off. Again, it's not like they sit there and they go, all right, you're our lead writer, so literally whatever you write is approved. It's not
It's a committee.
Exactly. So he probably was writing things. He was probably putting things into place, but ultimately had to fall under their instruction. And maybe, and I'm just speculating here, maybe he was hitting walls. And then he's like, oh, Bungie's over here calling me because they wrote a crappy game. And I could literally write the dumbest thing and probably get paid two times what I'm making now. Bye, guys. You know, and I don't think it'll affect them. Just like Uncharted 4 lost their lead writer. She's the lead writer, right? And
I don't know if she was the writer or the creative director or
creative director.
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm. So that's a big role too, though.
Sure.
And so to lose her, that's why everybody made a big deal. They're like, she's so talented, she's gone. But her replacement was nothing but pure talent.
Sure.
The two guys that replaced her know what they're doing. They only created Uncharted 2 and The Last of Us.
Yeah, and that remains to be seen with Mass Effect Andromeda. Like, who's filling in these empty spots that are being left? Undoubtedly, they're filling it with somebody. I mean, there's always you know, next man up type mentality, but hopefully it's...
We are writing this crap.
Yeah, hopefully it's not a robot and it's someone else who's got a good mind to help with, you know, craft that the beginning of the next Mass Effect trilogy. So
here's what I hope. And this coming from a BioWare fanboy,
mm-hmm.
please, for the love of God, please write a different story than humanity fighting against aliens or demons. Please, please write something new and fresh. Something, maybe humans fighting humans, or something outside of just, oh, this thing's going to destroy the universe, or these demons are uprising and they're going to destroy the entire planet. So we got to, like, come on.
Yeah.
It's the same story over and over. Yeah. Even though I'm not I enjoy it because I enjoy the small stories within the overarching story that's the same thing. I would love to see them do something completely different with Mass Effect and even Dragon Age as well.
Yeah, I'd like to see that too. I like when movies, games, books, TV shows, I like when they tell human stories, whether or not that's in some kind of within some grand overarching, you know, universe or world is at risk story or not. I like human stories that are being told, you know, character development and interesting interactions, relationships broken and built. And those things within the framework of some kind of story, whether or not it means humanity's at risk, that's what makes something good, a story good, I think. So hopefully they don't focus too much on how can we threaten humanity again for the player to save it. I like the idea of thinking outside the box. Hopefully they do that.
I hope so.
Sony's annual Spring Fever PlayStation Store promotion is being renamed, and it is now being called Launch Party, which is an appropriate title considering what the Spring Fever promotion was all about. And that is basically, here are six new games coming to the PS Store over the next 6 weeks, and each week you can access this game for 10% off. And so each of these games are smaller titles. They're normally $15 to $20, full price, and now you can get them for anywhere from, I think it's mostly 10% off.
Tim's trying not to use that word to set me off. Smaller titles.
Yeah, smaller titles. It's bite-sized. I'll stick with that. Smaller and bite-sized.
Indie.
value titles. As part of this promotion, Sony's offering a 10% discount on pre-orders, so you have to order it before they come out. So for this first week, if you are interested in the game Salt and Sanctuary, which is a very dark, kind of moody, side-scrolling action game, looks very medieval, lots of big monsters. I watched the video of it. It looks very cool. I can't really tell from the video how it plays, so I can't really vouch for it playing really well. But the style is definitely there. It's very much a storybook come to life style of characters and movements. Very, very interesting. It was not so different from something like Child of Light. It was just take all the whites from Child of Light and turn them really dark brown or black. And that's kind of the vibe you have for Salt and Sanctuary. It's very dark looking. And it also looks like you create your character, you pick your powers. It's kind of an interesting looking game. The following week is Day of the Tentacle Remastered. Really funny adventure game that they are bringing back. A lot of people excited for that one. Oh, by the way, Salt and Sanctuary is normally $20. It's going to be $17.99 if you pre-order. Day of the Tentacle is normally going to be, I guess it's going to be $15, and you get it for 10% off. I can't tell with the listing here in this article. Can you tell? I think it's $14.99.
Yeah,
you'll get 10% off.
Yeah, so it'll be $13.50.
Okay.
Yeah, I've seen the prices already. I checked the store.
April 5th is Enter the Gungeon, which is kind of an interesting medieval. It's an overhead action game, very fast-paced action game, but you get guns. So you're fighting in castles and against these dragons and demons and monsters, but you're using all sorts of crazy high-powered weaponry, all these crazy guns. Very, very fast-paced, very frantic. Enter the Gungeon. And then Stories, The Path of Destinies, is a game. Out of all of these, I think this one and the next one I'll talk about are ones that might interest you, Derek, if any. If any of them interest you, which none of them might, then these two might. The first one is Stories, The Path of Destinies, and it is a game that...
I think Stories, unless it reviews terribly, is going to be a day one for me.
I knew you'd like it. It's got that very much a... I think it's isometric view, but it's an action game, and it's very much the whole game plays out based on decisions you make. Like, do you save your friend or do you pick up the sword? You know, those kind of choices, and then the game plays out because of that, and that's why it's called Path of Destinies. Whatever choices you make, you'll have a different experience, then go back and make a different choice. It kind of has a very Disney cartoon look to it. Mm-hmm. I like the art style quite a bit. It looks really cool. You kind of look like the Fox version of Robin Hood from back in the old Disney days.
Yeah.
So yeah, very cool looking game. Stories, The Path of Destinies. And then the next week is a game that I heard about a lot from those who play mobile games, and that is Invisible Ink is dropping on April 19th for $20. So that'll be $18 on release. So Invisible Ink, it's a stealth, I think it's a looks like a turn-based, grid-based stealth game. And the reviews are just out of this world for this game.
That's the one that Giant Bomb was praising a lot.
Yep. It ended up in their top 10 for the year. And one of the guys, I think it was a guy named Austin, I want to say, he was adamant that that game is his favorite of the year and belonged on the top 10. So it's hard to... it's hard to ignore that when someone's that adamant about it, unless it's, of course, Grow Home, which we ignore that. But Invisible Ink, it's kind of, it got my attention. It looks very similar to something like I've seen with Hitman Go or with Republic or some of these other kind of isometric looking stealth games that I'm into, or Volume, which I need to play. And then the last one for this promotion is Alienation, comes out April 26th for $20.
Yeah, several of our friends in our group are real excited about Alienation.
Yeah, everyone's been talking about Alienation for a while now, so it's finally coming out. Day of the Tentacle Remastered will be a cross-buy title. It's the only one in this promotion that's both PS4 and Vita, so keep that in mind too. None of the other ones are going to be for both systems. They're all just for PS4, except Day of the Tentacle. So there you go. PlayStation Store launch party. Right, I always like these kind of promotions.
You were right about the two I wanted. Is there any that you're interested in playing?
Well, the two that I mentioned to you that I'm also interested in. I think Story is probably interesting to you more than me. It looks cool, but I'm much more interested in Invisible Ink. Salt and Sanctuary, I'm going to wait and see on the reviews. I want to see how do people think it plays, what's the word on that game, but it does look cool.
Mm-hmm.
Day of the Tentacle, I played a lot back in the day. I don't know if I'll grab it again, which I know sounds like blasphemy to a lot of people, but I played it a ton way back in the day. So I don't know if I necessarily
want to grab it again. Because I did no research. I looked at the pictures of Day of the Tentacle or whatever it's called, and I was like, nope. Plus, Matt Phillips likes it, so that's a definite nope. But what is it about? Why is this loved by so many?
Without giving away too much of the story, and again, it's not some crazy plot-twisting, amazing story, but it is. It's one of those things that's better just to experience it without knowing too much going in. But just know it's got a lot of lovable characters, very goofy writing, very funny.
Is it just like a story adventure game?
Yeah, it's an adventure game. Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of annoying puzzles?
Probably.
Okay.
I'm just thinking from your perspective, you'd probably think of them as annoying
Schaefer,
puzzles. I liked it. I found it to be charming, not too difficult, but still challenging.
Schaefer did it?
It's Tim Schaefer. Right? Yeah, Double Fine. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
So that's a pass, for sure.
So I'm going to pass on the first three unless Enter the Gungeon or Salt and Sanctuary get amazing reviews. And then Invisible Ink's definitely going to, I'm going to get that one. And then Alienation, I don't know. When a game gets talked about in hype too much, unless it's something that I already am super pumped about, I kind of ignore it.
First of all, I don't like twin stick shooters. I don't like...
I usually didn't either.
Yeah, I didn't like... what's the one game? Helldivers. I didn't hate it, but I didn't like it. Okay. I thought it had potential to be cool, but then I was like, I really just don't like that type of game. And so I watched a little bit of it. And I'll admit, it's flashy, it's beautiful, it's a good-looking game. So that caught my attention because, you know, mm-hmm. of course I'm a shallow gamer.
It does look good.
It does look good. And then I was like, yeah, but the gameplay is just like, it just looks like everything else I've already seen for that style of game. So it's just not something I'm into. I just can't justify buying it. And if I did buy it, I knew I would just let it sit there.
Well, and the reality is, at some point in the future, maybe even this year, I would say some, if not multiple of these, will become PS Plus games. Now, it's a gamble. You know, I'm not going to buy this, even though I'm interested, and because it might become free later. I'm not saying that that's a good approach, but if I'm on the fence, and I, like you just said, I'm not sure I'll actually get to it, then I'm not going to spend money on it yet. It will undoubtedly go on a deep discount, or maybe even PS Plus. So,
yeah, I think all these will eventually hit either a real, real, real cheap stage or they'll be free. But for like a game like, and like I said, Stories is going to come down to reviews because even though it looks amazing, it may be the dumbest, shallowest game ever. So I am going to rely on reviews, even though I know what I like. That type of game, I will rely on a review because it's a new IP. But that being said, if it reviews decent, like sevens and above, I'm mm-hmm. going to buy it day one. Like, I'm not going to go, well, it's an indie, so it's going to be free. I don't care. It looks freaking cool. I'll admit that game looks super cool. So
it does. It definitely does. So, guys, check out the launch party promotion from the PS Store starting this week on the 15th is the first one, Salt and Sanctuary. All right, Gears of War 4. The details have finally been revealed in the most recent issue of Game Informer. Now, I actually just recently began another subscription yet again with Game Informer's digital version. So I'll be checking out more about this probably this weekend when I get a chance to read it. So I've only read some of the articles that sum up the first announcements. Let me read this to you. This is from IGN. Gears of War 4 stars J.D. Phoenix, the son of Marcus Phoenix, and is set nearly 25 years after the events of Gears of War 3. So in the April issue of Game Informer, they're going to have additional details. I've heard over a dozen pages in their preview, special exclusive preview of this game. And it's going to talk about their three playable characters as well as new gameplay systems such as Close Cover Melee and Savage Windstorms across the planet Sera. The Coalition told Game Informer that Gears of War 4 sees a new trio, J.D. Phoenix, Kate Diaz, and Delmont Walker, surviving one night in the woods while encountering tons of terrifying new enemies. So Del and J.D. were involved in a classified incident that you'll learn about throughout the game, and it will support two-player couch co-op, which is an interesting thing for them to highlight right out of the gate. Here's something interesting for those of you who like the show Spartacus, which I did. Spartacus star Liam McIntyre will play J.D. Eugene Byrd of Battlefield Hardline is Del Walker, and Laura Bailey from Halo 5 and Tales of the Borderlands will be Kate Diaz.
This is so a great cast of characters.
It is. It's a good cast of actors filling in those characters.
I feel like Microsoft's been doing a really good job of going out and getting some really, really good actors.
Yeah, Quantum Break and all this, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was exactly what I was going to.
Yep. So, guys, we'll be talking more about Gears of War 4 as more is revealed. I'm assuming we'll see more at E3 even. But, Derek, just give me your initial thoughts on these first details and, I don't know, anything else you want to talk about with Gears of War 4?
I'm really excited for Gears of War 4. I'm a big Gears fan. I feel like I repeat myself because I really love, like, all games almost, except Indy. But
you don't love all games. You really don't.
I know. I feel like I do, and then I get on this show with you, and I'm like, I hate it. Shut up. Move on.
I'm glad you don't love all games because then you become across as insincere. But I can do a supercut for you at some point in the future if you want to hear all the games that you don't like.
Okay, good. I would like to hear it. But I'm real excited about Gears. Out of all of Microsoft's IPs, it's probably my favorite. Which is weird because I don't like it at all for the story or characters. So I'm really hoping the Coalition will do something really spectacular with Gears of War 4 and their characters. A couple things stuck out. We already talked about the fact that I feel like they got some really, really good voice actors. Yeah. It's Lauren Bailey, correct? She's in almost everything. She's also in the upcoming Uncharted 4. She's in so many games. She's really, really good. I also enjoyed the other two actors as well. But the other thing that I noticed, and I've already talked to a few people about, is the character designs. See, the original trilogy of Gears of War had these big, buff, mean-looking... Mm-hmm. Even the women characters were, like, the size of, like, huge dudes.
Everyone's a linebacker.
Yeah, they were all humongous, and they still moved pretty nice in gameplay, but they were huge.
They looked like NFL Blitz football players.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And now the new character designs, they look more human. They look more normal. They're still buff. They still got muscles, but they're not crazy looking. So I like that. I like that change. I like the voice acting. I like some of the gameplay. I like the fact that they announced co-op. That's a must for Gears. I'll admit, I was kind of hoping this would be a four-player co-op game, especially since we have so many friends that we can play with. I would love to be able to get four guys together and play.
I think we can hold out hope for the potential of maybe a three-player online co-op. All we know is that there's a two-player couch co-op. So who knows what they'll do with online yet.
Yeah, maybe they will do a three-player or four. I don't know.
I mean, if there's
maybe
three characters, there's potential there. So.
Yeah, and maybe they'll add like a fourth avatar, which would be kind of stupid. But at least three-player would be pretty cool. But yeah, I'm real excited about the little details we have heard. This potentially looks like an amazing game.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. All right, cool. Let's talk about some other games that have been announced. The first one is called Labyrinth. So Labyrinth began as a pen and paper game, and they describe it as a game that marries concepts from Hearthstone and Dungeons & Dragons. So it's a tactical role-playing game. It's turn-based, party movement dungeon crawler, but all your actions are the cards. So it's an interesting combination between something like a Hearthstone, a card game, and a strategy, character, party-based game like a Dungeons & Dragons. So it's kind of an interesting concept. It's by a developer called Free Range, and it is by far their biggest and most ambitious, according to them, project. So it's a very strange game as they blend these various ideas. Let me see if I can give you some info on when it might be coming out. Let's see. Again, tactical role-playing game, turn-based. It's openly inspired by Hearthstone, which is kind of cool. I like that game on my phone. It's one of the few games on my phone I played a lot when it first came out. There's three heroes in each match instead of just one. And let me see if there's anything else I can point out to you here. I'm not sure if I've already lost your interest here.
Oh, you lost it as soon as you said Hearthstone.
Oh, it's too bad. It's really fun. It's really fun. Okay, so it's like a, again, it's a grid-based, it's a grid-based map. The graphics look kind of Fire Emblem-esque kind of a thing with that isometric view, and you can move your party around turn-based and use cards to take actions. It looks kind of cool. Labyrinth, check it out, you guys, if you're interested in that. I believe it's coming out. It's supposed to be coming out, I think, later this year. I was looking for I was kind of scanning through. It's a long article.
Is it a PC game only? As soon as I hear something that's like card-based, it's normally PC and phones, mobile.
Yeah, I'm having trouble seeing the details there. But anyway, I think it's going to be PC and iOS, if I had to guess, just based
that
on the way.
That would be my guess.
All right, guys, Sniper Elite 4 sends World War II series to Italy. So Sniper Elite 4 is coming out. Did you play the other Sniper Elite games, by the way?
Yeah, I have a Sniper Elite. I think it's 3. I'm guessing it's 3 since this is 4. I really liked it.
I did too.
It's kind of got, it's almost got like a VAT system that you see in Fallout. It's got the kill cam.
Yeah, the kill cam is so cool.
You can do a specific shot on somebody's head or something like that, and it's like a slow-mo, and you watch the bullet go through their body. It's really cool.
Yeah, I like it. I liked war movies like Enemies at the Gate or Enemy at the Gate. It was that one with Jude Law and Ed Harris of the German sniper versus the Russian sniper during World War II. I like stuff like that. I really and also the movie Sniper with Mark Wahlberg has some cool, obviously, sniper moments in it. But so I like that. And I like games that focus on that. I've always liked the sniping sequences from some of the war games that I've played, like Call of Duty. And when I play games, even like Far Cry, which are kind of go in there and make a big mess and blow everything up, I still like to begin with a stealthy sniper approach in those games too. So Sniper Elite, I believe I've played 2. I'm trying to think of which one I played. I think I played Sniper Elite 2 all the way through and I liked it. So there you go. This one's coming out. It's supposed to come out later this year for PS4. PC and Xbox One. So that's coming your way soon. All right, let's talk about another game that's coming out. It was just announced. It's called Urban Empire. The company who developed Tropico, Calypso Media, is putting together, it's a city-building strategy game that is, it's not just about building cities, it's about ruling them. So the idea is to keep the city running for 200 years. And I do like the Tropico games. They're kind of cool, although at times they get weighted down by all the details you have to cover. And, I mean, talk about trying to manage resources. Even for someone who's okay with doing that, it can get a little bit foggy and it gets a little bit heavy after a while. But that being said, this one looks kind of cool, this Urban Empire idea. It is definitely in development for PC only at this point. So Urban Empire, new strategy game coming to the PC. All right, last game announcement I've got for you. And it's not even, I don't even have details for you, but it's just, this has been confirmed by Deep Silver that Sumo Digital is now officially developing Dead Island 2. So the company told MCV that it moved production of the zombie shooter over to this studio with further details to come soon. So unless I am missing or forgetting, I thought that Dead Island 2 was not being talked about at all. And now all of a sudden we have confirmation that someone is developing it. Am I remembering that correctly?
I mean, I saw a couple of like trailers. I feel like it was like 2 years ago.
But we haven't heard anything since then, right?
Or no, it's been really real quiet because of all the changes they've been going through. The thing is I like Dead Island. I even enjoyed Riptide a little bit. But after you play a game like Dying Light, it's hard to find a place like for Dead Island 2. Like, I know Dying Light's more of a serious tone, so my guess is Dead Island 2 is going to stick with the goofy less serious, you know, zombie open world.
Which is crazy action. Because the original Dead Island trailer was one of the most emotional trailers I've seen for a game ever.
Yeah. But they totally botched that. Even though I enjoyed the game, it just wasn't what a lot of people thought the
tone of that trailer was so misleading in the end, but man, was it a good trailer. Yeah. So good.
So, do I want to play Dead Island 2? Yeah, probably. But it's not one I'm, like, stoked for because I'm like, it's kind of... I mean, come on. You released two Dead Island games, like, in 2 years, and then you kind of go quiet, but then Dying Light comes out. So it's, I feel like we've got, like, these open-world zombie games every 5 seconds now. And then now The Following's out, which is basically feels like Dying Light 2, because it's in a totally different area. It's huge. And while it plays similar, obviously, it still has enough changes to it that it feels like a new Dying Light game.
So, yeah, and it really has taken on a life of its own.
Yeah.
All right, well, Polish website GRY Online may have released some information regarding The Witcher 3's newest and, I think, final major expansion, Blood and Wine.
Get hyped!
And it sounds like the release date might be April 26th, which is coming up very soon. So it might not be true, but if it is, that's very exciting for Witcher 3 fans. This was supposedly going to be Geralt's final adventure. So,
I also heard that, and we haven't heard anything about it, but I also heard Mafia 3 might be coming out April 26th. I'm like, how are you going to release all this stuff on the same day, but nobody's announced it yet, and we're recording on March 10th right now.
Yeah, you know, and I don't know if this is good news at all, but silver lining to Uncharted 4 getting delayed is that you've got other stuff to play during that time, even though Uncharted 4 is now in May. But of course, they're saying this could be a simple mistake. But given that the Polo studio has been known to be very open about its project within its home nation's gaming press in the past, the site very likely could have some insider knowledge that they accidentally posted the launch date of April 26th. So nothing's confirmed, but it seems like a pretty very likely rumor, I would say. I think it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the final Geralt adventure coming out at the end of April.
I'm really excited for this one, especially after, and we've talked about this, how I don't normally go back to a game after I finish it, unless I'm playing like a smaller campaign game and just repeating it.
Right.
You know, like The Last of Us or even Bioshock games, I'll do that. But these open world games, once I finish them, I'm done. And I like to get through the main campus and only do as many side quests as, I should say, minimum side quests as I can. But after playing Hearts of Stone and then knowing that this last expansion is going to be, I'm guessing it's going to be our goodbye to Geralt, who I've come to appreciate and love as a character the last couple games. I'm definitely looking forward to this. If it comes out April 26th, I'll be really, really stoked.
Okay. Yeah, me too. I think that's really cool. And I'm also excited. I'm hoping, as weird as this sounds, as much as I love The Witcher 3 and I am looking forward to playing both expansions, I'm actually looking forward to hearing what they're doing next with Cyberpunk. So part of me is, there's a little bit of that excitement for The Witcher experience, but there's also excitement to see, all right, are they going to totally shift gears now over to their next titles? That'd be exciting to see too, if they end up doing that.
Well, you got to say they've got to be one of the most talented studios. And then the way they do everything as far as how they are very transparent with their fans and they're constantly giving back to us. Like,
yep.
It's not even just the DLC that they gave us. And then we talked about Hearts of Stone was like $8 when it originally was announced. And the most you had to pay for it was 10.
Right.
And that was a 12 to 15 hour game easily. Expansion, I should say. You know, they just, everything they touch is gold, and the way they do it and the way they go across, it's almost like they're one of the few developers that I feel like they genuinely are fans of gaming.
Yep.
To the point where they're like, we love making these and we don't want to rip anybody off. We just want to give you what we feel like we would want to pay as a fan, and the extra stuff they gave you. I don't know if you bought a hard copy of The Witcher. But yeah. I actually ended up getting, like, the collector's edition. But even the normal editions of the game came with all this cool stuff packed inside the cases, like maps, stickers, emblems. All these things were packed into the game. The collector's edition was the same way. It had a huge Geralt statue, and then it was packed with all this like side stuff.
It's almost, you know, like they asked themselves internally as a team, what would I want with, with my game?
It was definitely the best collector's edition I've bought. I don't regret it.
Yeah, that's cool. All right, so yeah, CD Projekt Red, really like the games that you make. So I'm looking forward to seeing what you do outside of the Witcher universe, even though I am hoping it's not the last Witcher game we see. All right, let's talk about some of these headlines that don't necessarily need a ton of attention or discussion. Maybe they do, but give me five words or less your reaction to some of these things. Capcom has announced they're going to be docking league points from Street Fighter V Rage Quitters.
Good.
Yeah, I agree. Good. Overwatch will launch on May 24th with its open beta starting on May 3rd, running through the 9th.
Game looks really cool.
Valve is releasing a free VR test called The Lab, and it's set in Portal's Aperture Labs. That's the setting for this test.
Nobody cares.
Oh, come on. I care. I think that's a cool idea. Cool idea. Nintendo is closing Mario Kart TV Highlight Service on April 4th. I didn't even know this existed, but I'm not a Wii U owner, so... All right, and the final Hitman retail version has been pushed to January 2017.
Nobody cares.
Yeah, I think people care. Come on now. So the game is still releasing.
The Tim Nesters and Matt Phillips of the world.
And Nate Bacon a little bit, maybe. Yeah, the game, of course, is still releasing as scheduled. Its intro pack is still releasing. It already released by the time you heard this. And then they still, as far as I know, they haven't given dates. I think they've given months. So they're saying like, hey, then, you know, the next city will come out in April and then in May and then in June. So they've talked about when their next, I don't know if they're calling them episodes or levels. They're going to be coming out over the course of the next few months. But then they're fully packaged. Here's the full game for $60 experience is now going to release in January of 2017. That's for a number of reasons. Let me see if I can find the episodes. Okay, here we go. $10 each. Over the next few months, you're going to see Sapienza, Italy will be coming in April, followed by Marrakesh, Morocco in May. And then there's going to be a total of 7 episodes by the end of the year. So those are the two they've announced in April and in May. So
do you think you're going to end up just buying the whole package, or are you going to just buy it episode by
there
episode?
There's a pretty high likelihood that after I play through Paris, I'll be reminded of my love for the Hitman games and be excited for more, and I'll go ahead and hit purchase. It sounds like there's an in-game purchase option to go ahead and just buy. Like, give me the whole game.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah, so that's what I'll probably end up doing.
I'll let you buy it for me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, because we don't game share, though. So
We definitely do not. Shuhei, the person who never... He doesn't even know we exist. Shuhei, we don't do that.
If we get in trouble for game sharing, then it's going to be very easy to find the culprit, because there's only 2 listeners, you said? 2.6 listeners? It'll be easy to figure out who it is.
Yeah, 2.4565. Nah. Yeah. Well, here's my thing. Is game sharing even wrong? I mean, they allow you to do it.
I've looked into it. There's nothing directly talking about it. It's not a feature or function that they say, here's how to do this. But I also don't see a ton in plain writing that says you can't do this. I just know it's frowned upon and not encouraged. So,
I thought it was fine, because I know Xbox allows you to do that too. So
yeah, I don't know. But we don't do it, just in case.
I don't even know anybody. Paul Linga and Matthew Keel, they don't do it.
Oh, straight under the bus. All right, so that's kind of a rundown of the game announcements and the gaming news that's come out recently. I feel like all the other shows and podcasts that I listen to, they'll describe weeks that I think are incredibly packed full of announcements and news. And they'll be like, yeah, it's a slow week. And I'm like, what? It's not a slow week. But I feel like there's always plenty to talk about. But that covers us for this past week. And of course, there'll be more to come. I think at some point, you and I are going to have to bite the bullet and talk VR. I think after the PlayStation, maybe after Sony's event coming up here in a week or so, we can talk more about VR. Even as two guys that, as of right now, it sounds like neither one of us are on board. That might be a conversation that comes up too.
Yeah, I think there's a special thing March 15th. So I imagine since we'll probably be recording on the 17th for our next show, I'll probably be talking a lot about it. See, the thing is even though I've been kind of getting more aggressive pushing away from VR, I still, there's something inside me that's like, I really want to experience this. I want it to be good.
Yeah.
And I want it to be priced fair. And if it is, and I'll buy it.
Yeah. But well, we'll talk about it. We'll see what Sony says, and then we will we'll dig into it. But what I want to do to wrap up our show for this week is I want to get into a conversation about M-rated games. And the reason I want to do, there's a lot of reasons that I want to do this. Number one, I want to find out a little bit more and share a little bit more with our listeners about you and me and our history with gaming. Like, how did each of us approach gaming? At what point did we play M-rated games and things like that? But even more importantly, and I think more relevant to our normal conversations, is as parents with kids who like to play games, what do we do when it comes to M-rated games with them? Like, how old should kids be before they play M-rated games? Do you have rules in place? What kind of systems do you and or your wife have that you say, okay, this is how we monitor what they play? And I guess this could branch over a little bit into what they watch and listen to. But for the sake of, you know, this being a gaming-centric podcast, talking mainly about M-rated games, which the ESRB has determined means 17 and above. I believe, or is it 16 and above? I think it's 17 and above. It's basically rated R. That's what it's saying. It's like, hey, this is a rated R game. It's for the same reasons that a movie or a TV show is rated R or mature adult. So let me pose the question to you, and maybe this is not going to be a straightforward, simple answer. How old should kids be, or maybe in your case, how old should your kids be before they start playing M-rated games?
Yeah, I can't give you a quick answer to that, and I'll give you a reason why. Okay, so my kids can play M-rated games now.
You're the worst parent ever.
Yeah, that's why you gotta let me talk.
Nope. Discussion over.
Just cut it off right now.
See you guys. Thanks for listening.
Worst father ever. All right, so the way I look at it is not every M-rated game is equal. They're not all the same. That being said, I would compare, like, just as an example, Mortal Kombat X is completely different than Halo. I have no issue with Halo. Like, if my kids want to play Halo, what's wrong with Halo? There's barely any blood, if there's any blood at all. There's really no bad language. I think they say damn and hell. That's it. There's no sexual issues at all in those games.
Yeah, why is Halo rated M? That's a different conversation, I guess. I've always wondered.
The only thing I can think of is there's like a little bit of alien blood, and you see a little bit of red human blood every once in a while.
That game's got rated T for teen written all over it, in my mind.
In my opinion, yes. But it's not really overly grotesque. Whereas you've got, you know, games like the upcoming Doom and Mortal Kombat, those are all rated M, just like Halo. But they're completely different. Like, yeah. Mortal Kombat, you're literally splitting people in half and watching their insides fall out.
Yeah, same it's thing gross. With and the stuff that people are like, whoa, that's so cool. I just watched some videos online. I'm like, that is nasty.
Well, that's kind of where I draw the line. I wouldn't let them sit down and perform fatalities and play that because I know they'll want to do it later on, and that's fine, and I'll get to that in a little bit. I'll share something else. But M-rated games now, fine. It just depends on what they are. And since I'm actually into gaming, and I buy all the games, and I know what they are before I play them, I can be a good judge on what they can and can't play. Whereas a parent, like if I was just an outside parent who doesn't play games at all, I would go by the box, and I would put a stern, you're not playing mature games.
Right.
Does that make sense? Like, if I don't know gaming at all,
yeah,
then they're not playing M-rated.
Then you gotta trust the rating system at some point, right?
Exactly. But yeah. I know the games,
yeah.
So I have no problem picking and choosing which ones. Now, one game that was definitely more grotesque, but I did let them play, and this one you can call me a bad father, is I let them play Left 4 Dead. They really liked Left 4 Dead.
See, that's where I think we get into some gray territory, and I'm glad you brought up a zombie game. Left 4 Dead and games like Dying Light, well, who knows? The list could go on and on. Walking Dead, all these. They're very gross in an extremely non-realistic way. Is that a weird thing to say?
Yeah.
Zombies aren't anywhere close to reality. And kids get that even from as early as playing Plants vs. Zombies. These are fake. Now, these games look very real and they're very scary. And I don't think that any kid at any age should play super violent zombie game. That being said, I don't necessarily think you need to be 17, maybe not even like 13. I think there are certain ages where you kind of get it when it comes to some of those kind of games. So Left 4 Dead, for me personally, I'd probably give you a little more of a pass on in some cases, simply because of the cartoon nature and the extreme fake nature, kind of horror house nature of zombies themselves, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have an issue with it because the only thing I asked them when they would watch me play, I was like, does this game scare you? And because they get scared of a lot of my violent games. And I'm like, if it scares you, I won't play it. And they're like, no, I actually want to play it. And so, kind of a funny story. I don't think I've shared it on the podcast, and so you're going to get to hear it.
Yes.
Lucky you. So I went to work and, you know, did my normal routine, came back home, and I logged into my Xbox 360. So this is a few years back.
Okay.
So, you know, Emily was probably 8 or 9. And I have a message. So I'm like, okay, let me check it out. And it's a written message. And it says, hey, had a great time playing with you. You're really good, but I gotta go. I'm like, I don't recognize this gamer tag. And I didn't play with anybody online, because this is back when I just basically played single player. I never went online and played.
Okay.
Like, I have no idea what this is. So I go and check, like, my gaming history, like, what I'd been playing. Sure enough, it was Left 4 Dead. And I'm like, okay, I haven't played Left 4 Dead. So I go and talk to my daughter. I'm like, Emily, did you play Left 4 Dead? She's like, yeah, Dad, I was playing it. I loved it. I was like, do you know you were online? She's like, oh, I didn't know. I don't know. I was just playing. And if you've ever played Left 4 Dead, the menus are god-awful terrible.
Okay.
Like, it took me forever to figure out how to even play single player on the game. So it's real easy to get into an online game because it's the first thing that pops up and it's the only thing you see. You actually have to move the screen all the way over to see the other options. It's not on the initial screen. So I totally understand how she got into an
This was Left 4 Dead 2, right?
I think she played Left 4 Dead.
Oh, okay, the original. Okay.
Yeah, but she may have played two.
Okay.
But yeah, so she was online playing it, and apparently she was pretty good. Either that or she was playing with like another 8 or 9 year old who was probably shooting at the sky and had no clue.
They're like, wow, you killed everything while I was shooting these stars.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm not overly strict. I never have been, and again, I'll get into the reasons why. I don't make a big deal out of violence. I'm a little bit different towards sex and nudity.
What about language? That's usually the one that's not talked about as much.
I don't know. My kids just hear me talk, and I'm worse than any video game.
At least so. I'm glad you were honest, because I was going to super call you out if you're like, yeah, no, I try to shield them from bad language. I was going to be like, dude, that's a complete lie. Because I've been playing games with you before where you just drop some words, and then I hear you quietly say, sorry, Eli. And
yeah, that's kind of became our thing. It became a hashtag, sorry Eli.
Sorry, Eli.
Yeah, because my kids get frustrated, because they'll be like, Dad, really? Really, Dad? Yeah. Why are you cussing? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm just angry. And they're like, Dad, just calm down. Like, they're giving me pep talks.
Well, my kids are a little younger than yours, so they have not really crossed the M-rated game threshold yet. I think my older son, he's now 8. He'll be 9 here in a few weeks. He definitely can handle some of that stuff, especially some of the violent stuff. Again, not the extreme, like, torture-y, disgusting violence. I'm talking, like, Assassin's Creed. He's watched that a couple times, you know, just from over the back of the couch or something when I am climbing up high in a building and I jump down and stab a guy and kill him. And like, it's, to me, Assassin's Creed is an example of a game that has violence. It's got blood. It's not extreme. You're not seeing these really slow motion, like throat slits or, you know, the knife going in slowly and lots of gurgling. It's not horrible. That being said, I don't purposefully let my kids watch it, but he's seen some of that and he can kind of handle it, but I won't let him play it. So there's something to me about them seeing it on the one hand, and if I do see them watching a game they shouldn't, if I'm playing it, I'm like, you know, I go in the other room or I stop playing the game.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, if they're actually experiencing it, if they're playing it, if they're the ones controlling the violence, I'm a little more protective of that. So if they're playing a game where they're fighting, and most games involve some kind of fighting, I still want to make sure it's in the realm of fantasy and complete make-believe. As soon as it starts to feel a little more real, like I would never let them play Far Cry Primal right now. That feeling of swinging a club and actually, for real, bashing someone's skull in or stabbing them through the neck, out the top of their head with a spear, like that's disgusting. And fortunately, as an adult, understanding what I'm doing, it's totally fake. It's not real at all. As a kid seeing that, it looks about as real as it gets. Or even experiencing that, you know, like playing it themselves. So I'm more protective of what they experience, number one, than what they see. But I am still very protective of what they see and what they hear. I try to make sure that anything Witcher, anything with Far Cry Primal I've been playing through, those have all been, you know, post-bedtime games. Those are all things that I kind of keep them away from. As far as what games they play on their own, they all have DSs. We play on the Wii. I think Castle Crashers is probably the most violent game they've played. And that's rated T because you got lots of real cartoony violence. You know, and it is pretty violent, you know. You got these little creatures getting their heads lopped off and stuff. And there's blood on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's very cartoony violence, but it's still violence. It's rated T for a good reason. So that's about as violent as it gets for them, is something like Castle Crashers. To me, it's pretty... And here's the thing. Since I am so involved in the gaming world, you know, I'm very up to date on what games are okay for kids, what games are not. I've never really worried about the rating system. I just know what I'm going to let them play, what I'm not.
Yeah.
But I totally agree with what you just said. For any parents who might, and if you talk to any parents, or maybe if you have friends who have kids, and they ask you guys, hey, how do I know what games are okay with my kids? Just give them the very simple advice. Look at the ESRB rating on the box and follow that. If it says E or E10 and your kid is in that age range, that's cool. If it says T for teen, look on the back and it'll give you a description of why it's rated T. You know, is it for language? Is it for some kind of sexual content? Is it for violence? Check out why. And if it's rated M, just in general, as a parent, stay away from it. Now, once they're preteens or teenagers, then maybe it's time to start digging in a little bit more. But for me in general, I don't think my kids will be regularly playing rated M games. I would say at least until middle school, hopefully maybe even high school. Just depends on the game. It depends on the game.
Yeah, I mean, the most they played was Left 4 Dead, and they barely played that. Most of my kids, what they want to play is the kiddie games, which is cool. Like, I don't have to worry about like them being like, Dad, can I play Mortal Kombat? Or sneaking off and doing it, or can I play Killer Instinct or Doom when it comes out? They don't care about that stuff. If anything, like I said, if they watch me play something, they'll, a lot of times, even if it's not a scary game, if it's just ultra-violent, they'll be like, Dad, I'm scared of that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, so I can't play this
in front of you. Yep, and my kids are the same way in that, like, if they notice that I'm playing something or I'm getting ready to start playing as they're going to bed, they'll even acknowledge, like, oh, this is a scary game. Like, you play this while I go to sleep. Like, they totally get it. They kind of get the separation of you can watch this, I can't. If we come home with a big stack of movies from the library, they already know just from looking at the covers which ones are for me and which ones are for them. You know, like, I had some Liam Neeson movie, I forget. Well, Taken. It was Taken or something.
XXX Neeson.
That's the one. That's the one. Yeah. XXX Neeson. But they, you know, they see that and they see some guy looking all serious and sweaty with a gun, and he's like looking down the the barrel of the gun on the cover of the movie, and they're like, "Oh, that's a scary one. That's for you, Dad." You know, and I'll take Curious George and Dora in the room, and I'll leave you alone out here with your scary movie. So they kind of get it now. My oldest son is just now starting to get really pushy on, I want to watch. So I think for me, I'm on the precipice of some new challenges in that realm when it comes to movies and with games. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I lean towards saying, ah, it's okay, he can handle some of this. And my wife leans towards, don't let them watch any of that garbage that you play.
Yeah.
So that being said, how old were you when you first played? Do you remember when you first played an M-rated or equivalent? Maybe it didn't have ratings when you played it, but a rated R style of a game. Do you remember the first, you know, game you played?
My brother was a PC gamer, and so he had Doom and Duke Nukem and all that. And I played, I think the first one that I like got into was like Unreal Tournament. And that was really gory because it was like everything would explode. And I was like, this is... I'm kind of opposite of Tim. I love violence. So like when I saw stuff explode, I was like, this is the coolest game ever, you know? I sucked at it. Like I didn't understand how to use a mouse and keyboard. And it was way too fast. So I got frustrated with it. But that's... My first taste was probably those three games. But... kind of a story on the side of that, the game that really hooked me when I was way too young, and I was probably like 9 or 10 when I first saw Mortal Kombat, and I saw a fatality, and I was like, what is that? You know, like, I seriously, yeah. That was my reaction, like, what was that?
Yeah.
I need that game. And so my parents were the opposite of how I am. They didn't play games. They didn't support it. You know, I think I shared, we would get like one game maybe a year and we would play the heck out of that game. So, but we would go to like Video View and rent games every once in a while. So my mom was the least cool about that. But they had I don't know if they had the ESRB, but they had some type of rating back then, because I know when Mortal Kombat 2 came out, I rented that. And I had to hide it, because whenever my mom would walk by, if she saw any violence, she'd be like, what are you playing? So that was like one of the first games I became really addicted to.
And by the way, moms have a sense for that. They know when to walk in during the sex scene of a movie or a super violent part of a game. Like, all mothers of all ages, they have a knack for walking in right at the worst moment. And you have to be like, Mom, it's not about that. You know, so... Mm. Yeah.
No, she definitely knew something was going on. And I was... It's kind of funny looking back, because I was really terrible. Like, Mortal Kombat 2, I snuck, but it was more because I could go over to my friend's house and borrow it from him, or if he rented it, we'd go over and play that and stuff like that. But when Mortal Kombat 3 came out, Mortal Kombat 2 was my favorite game. So I had... This is when I started getting into games, and I had to own them.
Right.
And so I remember I had this whole deal worked out with this older kid. I was like, I'll give you the money, you go to the store, you get the game, you bring it to my house, and nobody will know. I won't even tell my brother. Like, he can't know, because my brother is a jackass, and he'll go tell my mom. So, because he didn't like Mortal Kombat. So I got him to buy me Mortal Kombat 3, and this is how cool I was. Every room my mom would be in, I would pick up my TV and my PlayStation, and I would move it to a different room.
Oh my gosh.
So I even eventually ended up in her room while she was out in the living room. And she's like, why did you move the TV and your video game system into my room? And I'm like, I don't even know what my excuse was.
No reason to you.
Yeah, and then when she came into her room, I then moved into the other one.
Wow.
So... It kind of sucked, because my brother eventually ratted me out, so I had to get rid of the game, which I lied about that. I think I hit it or something like that. I was pretty addicted to Mortal Kombat, if you can't tell.
And that's a good one, though, as like a first, when I was, you know, when you're a kid and you get hooked on violent games. I remember very vividly the first time I saw what I considered to be violence in a game, because remember, I'm coming off of Atari 2600, so I'm playing things like Asteroids and Pitfall and Frogger. And the first time I saw like blood and violence in a game was in the old PC version of Prince of Persia. So as you're, you know, jumping through different obstacles and stuff, if you make the wrong jump and fall down onto the spikes, all of a sudden your guy's impaled like in multiple spots in the spikes. I was like, whoa, that's pretty gross. There's blood dripping off the spikes now. That's me. Like, that's my guy. That was the first time I remember seeing death. There's also these these giant blades. They look like teeth opening and closing real fast as you're trying to make it through certain hallways. And if you make the jump wrong, it'll slice you right in half. And then the blood will kind of trail up and down with those blades after you're cut in half. Those things stood out to me as like the first time I saw violence in games. That combined with something like Wolfenstein 3D, you know, watching, you know, you're actually shooting not only soldiers who are trying to kill you, and it was scary because it was like first person, so I thought they were actually coming at me, but also those dogs scared the crap out of me. And not only are they trying to kill you, but you have to shoot dogs in that game. So that was a little bit disturbing. So those stood out to me. They kind of stuck with me. As far as like an actual rated M game that had that type of rating, I think Doom would have to be my first one.
Yeah.
So Doom was one of those games that, you know, my brother and I, we got it, and my parents had no idea if it was good or bad. And as long as they didn't see us playing, like they didn't walk in and see how gross it was or whatever, then it was never a big deal. We were Street Fighter kids. We were not Mortal Kombat kids. So we'd already played lots of Street Fighter, but that's very cartoony violence. There's nothing really scary there. But we got Doom, and we turned off all the lights, and we played it in the dark, and we would take turns. But then I remember playing it by myself and feeling scared, you know, because my brother wasn't there playing it anymore. So yeah, Doom was the first rated M game that I played, and it was rated M for a reason back in the day, although now we look at it and kind of chuckle. But it was pretty scary, man. I mean, not even just rated M for the violence, but just kind of the overall fear it induces in young kids in that game. So it was great, though. It was good stuff. And of course, things went on from there. I think the first truly mature game that I played is probably something like a Metal Gear Solid. Maybe Grand Theft Auto 3. Like that I really truly was like, yeah, I'm too young to play this, but I still played it anyway. You know, as those games came out. Those are the first times that I really felt like this is like a rated R movie and I'm experiencing it. But yeah, it's interesting to think back and no, my life wasn't ruined and my brain was not fried by seeing something a little too scary, a little too violent for my age. That being said, I'm glad that most of my time gaming was spent with kind of grand sweeping adventures with action platformers or maybe adventure games on the PC or maybe RPGs on the Super Nintendo. Like I'm really glad that that's what set the foundation for me for games. And it wasn't just, you know, complete blood and gore. And that's why I think my experience with video games, the foundational love that I have for this hobby, is different from kids today who are starting out right away with ultra realistic violence. And I'm not calling that ultra realistic stuff bad inherently. I'm just saying their experience with games are much different and they have to make a real concerted effort to go back and play old games to have that same kind of foundational experience that we had growing up. But anyway, yeah, for me, those rated M games, it's something you got to watch out for a lot more now than you used to. So for those of you out there, you parents, I mean, I'm not going to tell you how to parent. You do what you when it comes to your kids.
You do you.
But I would encourage you, if you're not 100% sure, if you know someone who's not sure exactly how to pick games for their kids, follow those ratings if you're not informed. And if you are informed, then yeah, it's probably not going to hurt kids to wait a little bit longer to play. I can tell you that, to play rated M games, because there's so many games out there for them to play.
Would parents really listen to somebody who watches Neesom XXX? I mean, really?
Neesom XXX.
I need some XXX. We all know what you're writing.
Liam Neeson is the man, though. You know, despite your attempt at making it sound like I watch Liam Neeson porn, Liam Neeson is the man. All right, so community, let's hear from you. When we post this episode, head over to our Facebook group and look for this post for episode 10, and in the comments I want to hear from you. How old for you, for your kids, for your family, do you have an age where kids can play M-rated games? Do you have any other kind of system, you know, as long as a game does or doesn't have this kind of content, they can play it? And then what about for you personally? Share with us, what was your first M-rated game experience, or at least something that was similar to an M-rated game, like a Duke Nukem or Doom or something like that. So I'd love to hear from you guys. Give us your take, your input. All right, well, that should wrap us up for episode 10, unless I'm forgetting something. So what I want to do, again, this is unique. We've never done this before. This is brand new. What I want to do is close out with words of wisdom from the one and only Derek Teague. So, Derek, it's been amazing to hear you pull these things straight out of your butt at the close of each episode. I mean these plan statements. That's what I meant. It's been amazing to hear these plan statements from you. So go ahead and share with us your words of wisdom for episode 10 for our listeners.
I just want to take this moment to really encourage the listeners to, when you have the opportunity in life to go above and beyond and really like reach out and help somebody, I want you to think of yourself and I want you to do what's best for you. I want you to ignore what those other people need. I don't think you need to reach out. I don't think you need to go above and beyond. I think being average is okay. So remember that. Be average. Be okay.
We are going to make an inspirational poster with one of your bathroom selfies, and underneath it's going to say, be average.
Hashtag be okay.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back with episode 11. Take care.
Who is your daddy?
I am the father.
Your fathers will understand.
My father taught me many things.
I got an idea. How about you all sit there quietly while I make dad noises?